This is the WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you. Now, your host, Scott Walker.
With us in studio today, we have Murfreesboro Mayor Shane McFarland. Shane, how are you this morning?
I'm good, man. How are you doing this morning? How's everything in your world?
It's good. What's new with you?
Found out that Veterans Park, they've got the bid packages ready, and that's getting ready to go out to bid to start that project. So looking at that park will be finished end of 2025.
So what all is going to be in that new park?
There's 150 acres on that property on Veterans Parkway, and what they're showing is much more of a true community park, passive open space, walking trails. It looks like there's some pickleball and tennis courts, pavilions, volleyball. I mean, just really more of a open space, you know, be able to go out and kick a soccer ball, you know, hit a baseball, really like the people you see at SportsCom that go out and hit golf balls next to the airport. So it's going to be, I think, something that the neighbors out there will really, really enjoy.
So to put that into perspective, Barfield Park is what, over 450 or so acres?
Yeah, but Barfield is almost an anomaly compared to some of our other parks because, I mean, I was at Barfield Park all weekend for baseball. You've got really Barfield set up into different segments. You've got the baseball fields, then you've got the Greenway trailhead that's there. Then you've got on top of that the Wilderness Station with all of the land back there. Actually, even have a campground back there. Barfield is by far our largest park that we have.
Kind of unusual, really, for any city the size of Murfreesboro to have a park like Barfield.
Yeah.
Even a mountain bike course.
Well,
there.
Yeah, mountain bike course. You know, we added 70 acres. We were able to purchase, a family was selling their land next to it. So we've continually been able to add on to that park just because there's not really, I mean, I don't know of many parks like that around inside the city that have as much as it has.
And by the way, if anybody has questions for the mayor, you can text us at 615-893-1450. Do you remember a couple of years ago where people were talking about how they wanted an ice skating rink somewhere in Murfreesboro? And I don't ever know what happened to that conversation, but there were talks of, you know, it sounded like it could really happen one day.
We've talked about multiple locations. Councilman Wade has been one who's really worked and pushed on that. The Preds Foundation,
They've got two.
There's one in Bellevue and one in Antioch. The Ford, I forget what it's called.
The Ford Ice Center. Yeah.
But what we're trying to really do in a growing city like us, I mean, like we're not like Nashville that we've got this huge tax base and higher taxes in Nashville. We have to prioritize, you know, what we're doing, and the Veterans Park has been a huge priority that we've really worked on. I mean, since 2016, then you start looking at, we've not built baseball fields since the mid 90s. It's almost been 30 years since we built new baseball fields. We really need to work on that. But Scott, everything is so expensive now to build.
It is,
and I think the listeners, I hope, will appreciate this. We're trying to, of course, we would love to do everything, but there's a price tag that comes with that. And that price tag typically is associated with a tax increase if you want to do all those things. And we're trying to be diligent to identify what our needs are and then also what our wants. And it's just like the way that we handle our house. I mean, I'd love to have a lot of things, but that's not a need. And you know, I suspect that Veterans Park is going to be in the $20 million range by the time that we go through the grading package and all of those things. We've got about $13 million, I think, is the number that we've set aside. It's somewhere in that neighborhood that we've set aside that, you know, we have cash to pay so we don't have to borrow money. But you start looking at road projects that we want to do. We've talked about, I mean, here recently we've allocated almost $5 million to public safety for police officers and firefighters to be able to get raises. So we've got all of these things that we're trying to balance and do that without raising taxes. And that gets harder and harder every year.
And really, raises and pay, that they have to be done. Otherwise, you're not going to be at a competitive level like some of the other nearby cities, and then you won't be able to keep anybody. The turnover will be high, which that, again, becomes more expensive than the alternative.
Yeah, I think our number one priority, and people ask me all the time, what is the number one priority is in the city of Murfreesboro? And it's easy to say, okay, this is the most important thing at the moment. But we really can't say this is the number one thing because we have 15 other things that we need to work on as well. But I do think everyone agrees public safety and having a safe community is important. And the council over really the last 10 years, I would argue it would be tough to find another city in the state that has increased public safety pay as much as we have. And, you know, here over just a month ago, we ended up on average giving 14-15% to fire, and then over the last two or three years we're close to 20%. We were 10.6% is what we gave to police officers this year, where I just saw an advertisement come across that, you know, a lateral move for a student resource for an SRO, so a student resource officer, is in the high 70s. And I mean, I continue to say this, I think you're going to see over the next 4 or 5 years, I think you're going to see our police officers and our firefighters, those numbers are going to continue to go up, because what's the alternative? I mean, the alternative is exactly what you said, other municipalities and cities poaching your best and your brightest, where it's much more expensive to train people than it is to keep the right people in your community.
And I would imagine you also have to look at the safety side of it. And, you know, if you have a high turnover on top of that being costly, well, that means you're constantly getting new officers in who have different opinions. I mean, yeah. you have no continuity there.
No, I agree. Yeah, and the profession itself now, I mean, our average turnover rate inside the city of Murfreesboro, I want to say the month of June, it was 4%, and that was for the year, which 4% is great. I mean, we don't want to lose anyone, but I hate to say this, there are people that leave that we want to leave. So I think what we're trying to do is to make sure that our pay is comparable and that we're leaders in pay. But the other part too, Scott, that the council's talking about is increased vacation time, increased sick time. We have to make sure that it's the other intangibles that you have at your city to keep people that are important, and that's not just pay. But, you know, you look at retirement now, we have a 401k plan where we used to have a defined benefit plan, and there's definitely some advantages and disadvantages, but, you know, the way the market has been, people's 401k, those are important assets for them. So, I mean, we're trying to do everything we can to make sure that we recruit and retain the best and the brightest.
We have a text question here already, and again, our number is 615-893-1450. The first, it highlights the population of Murfreesboro, and they're saying that it feels like at least 200,000 people live here. First of all, they're curious, what is the actual population, or do we have a somewhat hard number on that?
We'll be going through a special census soon. I think our last census, we were like 150,000 some odd residents. I think we're a lot closer to 170,000, 180,000 now. Our average growth last year was about 1.9%, which is a manageable number. 1.9%, I mean, it's not the 7-8%. And I think that's something we've tried really over the last 5 or 6 years to really be diligent with our growth. If you look, you know, besides the Gateway area, there's not a lot of apartments that have been approved. The Gateway area, I would argue, is probably a good area to be able to have more dense living. But I think what you're seeing, Scott, and this is something that luckily I've talked to several different commissioners with the county that we've had great discussions. But what you're seeing now, because of the step system requirements that are allowed, you're really seeing developers who are bypassing coming into the city. For example, on Blackman Road, where the new Beatty Farm is being, or Beatty School is being built, there's a subdivision across the street that you would think is a city subdivision, but it's not a city subdivision. It's a county subdivision, but has curb and gutter. It's, I mean, all the things that you would see, but it's as dense of a subdivision as you would see inside the city. And so I think what we've really got to coordinate, and I'm thankful that we have the commission that we have that wants, the county commission that wants to work with the city council, we've got to make sure that developers are not bypassing the city and going to the county doing the same dense subdivision that you could do in the city just because they don't have to go through a city process. You know, I would argue the county is really for larger lots for not as dense subdivisions, and the city is where you want to, you know, have your more dense subdivisions.
So how are they doing that out there if they're, let's say, on septic, or is it a step septic system?
It's a step system. You know, we've changed our density to where really for single family, you're going to be somewhere around 3 to 4 units per acre is all you can get. Townhomes, realistically, you're about 5 units per acre. Multifamily, which there's just not much of anymore, is that 7 to 9 units per acre. But, you know, when you can go out into the county and on a step system, you can get 3.5 to 4 units per acre based on how your soil is, you know, how it perks, then there's some really dense subdivisions that are sort of on the city limits that we don't want. You know, for example, the Del Webb subdivision that was built out on Highway 96.
Is that in the county?
That's county.
Okay.
That's not a city subdivision. Because we initially met with Del Webb on that project, and we just didn't feel like we could provide services out there. I mean, we didn't feel like that. That's about 2.5 miles from the city limits on Veterans Parkway, and we didn't feel like that it made sense that we could go provide trash pickup, that we could provide police and fire out there, because, you know, that's a couple thousand units that are going to be built out there. And so those are some of the things I think coordinating with the county, which again, I'm thankful that we've got great discussions with the county, that working on solid waste, and we're working on lots of different things that, you know, as the city and the county continue to grow, it's going to take massive amounts of coordination. And I think between our two planning departments, massive amounts of coordination. I mean, for example, Scott, if a developer comes to the city and they want a subdivision and they want to be annexed in the city, and we see significant infrastructure, for example, like the road network that needs to be worked on, then, you know, we want to be able to have that dialogue with the county to say, hey, this is probably not a good idea to put a dense subdivision on this road because there's such road infrastructure that needs to be done.
As a builder yourself, are there potential problems when somebody goes in and builds a massive neighborhood that's on a step septic system versus being on city sewer?
You know, I think the first step system was built probably 25 years ago. So I think if they're managed correctly, that step systems last for a long time. So I think you're fine. I think the thing for the resident to really think about is, does it make sense to put dense subdivisions in the periphery of the county where you have limited services that can be provided? Because, you know, think about this, Scott, most of the time when you develop in the county, you're typically developing on a 2-lane road, and you're really developing on roads that don't have shoulders, that don't have curb and gutter, you know, that are predominantly ditch systems. So you really want to make sure that we coordinate. Again, I think that's the thing that I've talked to Commissioner Phillips a couple of times, and Pettis Reed is another one that I've been able to talk with. Pettis has had some good points on, you know, things that the city has done out in the Rockville community. And I think that coordination and us listening to those commissioners, something I'm really excited about. It's like anything. I think new people come in and you get fresh ideas. And Darren Gore, our new city manager, he started July the 2nd. And like last week, you know, in better cooperation and making sure that we keep our county commissioners involved, he started doing, I call it a mashup, but it's like a highlight reel where our City TV3 is doing highlight reels and sending out to the county commissioners to let them know, hey, here are things that are going on in your district that we want you to know about. So, you know, Commissioner Dodd, who's been great to work with, Commissioner Harris, Commissioner Cush, Commissioner Phillips, you know, those commissioners who have representation in Murfreesboro, we want to make sure that we let them know what's going on. And I don't think we've done a good job with that. And that probably is why there's some of the animosity that when the county doesn't feel like they know what's going on. So I think this is just a step that we're trying to make sure that we're all on the same team and we're working together. And I think we're heading in the right direction on that.
Let's try to fit in a phone call real quick here. Good morning. Thanks for holding.
Yes, I was wondering, you said, you mentioned just a moment ago about 1.9 growth rate that was manageable. Well, I mean, who's managing Old Fort Parkway? Because I don't know if you've ever traveled down through there in the last, you know, couple of years, but it is a total nightmare. It's basically a parking lot. And also wanted to mention, you know, what decisions are made, and I'm going to give you an example. The Kroger out on South Church Street is probably one of the largest, or if not the largest, Kroger retail-wise and space-wise in the state. Yet they built that with probably the smallest parking lot of any Kroger in the state. And then on top of that, on the entrance of Kroger from Church Street, they added an oil change shop. Now, I think we need to be more smarter than that when we've already got overcrowded. Traffic gets bumper to bumper almost 24-7 on Church Street, and you got a retail Kroger that is so large that you can barely get in and out of. And then you have someone build or give the okay to put an oil change shop drive-through right there as you go. You actually drive through where they park cars and are waiting in line to get the oil change, and it's just a total cluster there.
How much say does the city have when it comes to saying okay or not okay to build, for example, an oil change shop in front of Kroger?
So let me start first with Old Fort Parkway. You know, Old Fort Parkway is a state road, but the city council, we voted 2 weeks ago that we allocated another $13 million out of our capital improvement plan that we switched around to be able to have more money in the pot to be able to hopefully get TDOT to help us with what's about a $35 million project. So to the callers, the caller has a great point about Old Fort Parkway. You know, you also have to think about that a lot of the people on that road are not necessarily residents of Murfreesboro. It's people who are coming here for healthcare. It's people who are coming for lots of goods and services. But the city council did step up to say, we're going to take money from X project. I think the project was Highway 96, the widening on Las Casas, that we thought, you know, the odds of that happening anytime soon, where TDOT has really changed their funding rules, that we've allocated almost $15 million to be able to say, we've got $15 million, we need your help. So I think you're going to see Old Fort Parkway will be addressed in the next year on starting a process of making that larger to be able to handle that traffic. Now, as far as South Church Street, you know, we have parking requirements that you have to have X number of parking spots per 100 of 1,000 square feet you have for your facility, and they meet those requirements. I do think something that we are putting an extreme focus on right now is Home Depot, Lowe's, some of those organizations that are using their parking for storage. And so, or for sales. So we're working on that. But I mean, to the caller's question about, I was at 231. I drove up and down 231 about 8 times this weekend, going from the north side of town to Barfield.
It's rough. It's a lot of traffic.
It is a lot of traffic. But I mean, I never sat in bumper to bumper traffic going to Barfield. Our first game was at 8 o'clock. Then we had I drove home. We had an 11:30 or a 1 o'clock game. Then came back on Sunday for a 8 o'clock game. And then we had a 1 o'clock game on Sunday as well. And I went through that area right where he's talking about the oil change place. I went to Starbucks and got a cup of coffee. I think he does have a good point about the oil change spot right there. You know, I think the issue is when something is zoned there and somebody has a property right to be able to put something there, it's tough to be able, once it's ever approved, to say, no, you can't go back with something. So we continually are changing design guidelines. We're continually changing things to be able to prohibit and try to improve those situations. But I mean, he's got good points. I mean, look, 231 is a 5-lane state road. We were having a discussion about a project that the school system is wanting to do on 231. And one of the things that we had the discussion about was, okay, how do you get a bus on and off of 231? So I think we're continually trying to address those things.
And it's, you know, during the weekday, you know, the morning hours and the afternoon hours when 231 South is stopped for the most part.
But I mean, Scott, and I'm not trying to be flippant on traffic or not understand that it's an issue. And I ask this, to the caller, what growing city that you've been to does not have traffic in the mornings and the afternoons on their roads?
Yeah.
And it's an honest question. I mean, look at Smyrna on Sam Ridley Parkway in the mornings and the afternoons.
Same thing.
So I don't know how you fix that. And so, you know, I'm in Knoxville all the time now, and traffic is the same way in Knoxville. It's the same way in Chattanooga. It's the same way in Nashville. So I'm from Monteagle, and I'm back at Monteagle quite a bit, and there is no traffic in the mornings and afternoons in Monteagle. But there's not many opportunities there either. Most people in Mont Eagle are having to drive to Kimball or to Tullahoma or to Winchester or to Murfreesboro or to Manchester to get goods and services. So there is a trade-off. If you can have that ability to not have any of the traffic and the growth, but typically in those communities, there's no jobs, there's not much opportunity, and there's not many places to go.
Again, with us this morning in studio, we have Murfreesboro Mayor Shane McFarland. We got to take a short break, and then we'll be right back to take your call. So if you're on hold or if you texted a question in, we'll get to that. We'll get to your question. We'll get to your call in just a second.
If I'm in the mood for pasta, I go to Demas's. If I want steak, I go there. It does not matter what I'm in the mood for. This is Peter Demas. The only thing we don't have is fried food. So it's very easy when you want to take a group out and there's that veto power person is like, I don't want this. Well, we usually will have something that they want because we have such variety on our menu. The only thing we don't have is fried food. Demas's Restaurant on Northwest Broad Street.
Hi, this is Dave Kivenemi at Music World and Drummer's Den, 2762 South Church Street in Murfreesboro. We're across from Indian Hills Golf Course. Come out and see us for all of your music needs. We've got guitars, pianos, amps, drums, PA equipment, rentals, lessons, most anything you can think of in the music genre. Come see us at Music World and Drummer's Den on South Church. We're across from Indian Hills Golf Course.
Stickers, labels, we do a lot of direct mail, booklets, manuals, programs. My name is Jeff Carlton. I handle sales and marketing for Franklin's Print Works here at Murfreesboro. We are at 2227 South Park Drive. Franklin's Print Works has been in Murfreesboro for over 25 years. We are a full-service commercial printer. We offer everything from business cards to brochures, booklets to banners, everything in between. Our website is franklinsprinting.org.
Bob Ferris enjoys life at Adams Place.
I do physical therapy here and ride the bicycle. This morning I rode the bicycle for 20 minutes. At Adams Place, I enjoy the friendship. We have a good time.
Hi, this is Terry Deal at Adams Place. Call me for more information about Adams Place. Phone 615-904-9111. Adams Place, 1927 Memorial Boulevard, across from Walmart.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Right now that time, 8:43. And with us in studio on the air this morning, we have Murfreesboro Mayor Shane McFarland. Let's go ahead and take another quick question here. On this text, it says, will school choice save money since the city and the county won't have to construct expensive new schools?
I mean, I think it's a part just because options are good. But, you know, I was talking with the chairman of the Rutherford County School System, the board yesterday, Claire Maxwell. Claire's doing, they're doing a good job. I don't think it's going to be the end all be all. So what we're trying to figure out, and here's the thing, she told me this, $870 million is what they've got in the pipeline right now of needing to be built. And so the thing you have to think about, that $870 million, that's not the tail of the dog, that's just the dog. So there's a tail that comes with that, which are operational costs, maintenance costs. So there are all these things. I think anything that we can do to be creative really helps. The part that I'm concerned with, and you know, look, I've seen all three sides. My boys went to public school. I went to public school my entire educational career. Then, you know, we homeschooled our boys, and then we made the decision that we wanted, you know, our boys to be in a Christian environment, so they went to private school. And the thing that I think that is extremely important is, you know, the phrase now is that the money follows the child. And I think that is important, but we have to make sure, I represent the city of Murfreesboro, and we have to make sure that everyone is playing on the same level. So for example, if you're in a private school, there are certain things that you don't have to offer. You don't have to offer, you know, special needs services. You don't have to offer English as second language. You don't have to offer these things that the federal government has mandated to our city and our county institutions. You have to do this. It's not fair to say, look, if you're X school, you can get the same amount of money but you don't have to provide the same services. That's not us being on the same playing field. And so I think that's the important part that we can't forget, that if we're going to do these type of things, you can't put, for example, the city of Murfreesboro at a disadvantage to other schools that are in the community. And that's, I think that's the important part.
Let's take another phone call real quick. Again, our number is 615-893-1450. And good morning. You're on the air with the mayor.
Yeah. I wanted to make the mayor aware of a situation I've noticed. There's people washing cars and trucks all over the city in vacant lots. I'm sure they're not, don't have a license. I'm sure they're not paying income tax. I understand if a bunch of cheerleaders wants to have a car wash for charity for their money. You got all the environmental impact of all this stuff going in the ground. And I just wonder if he was aware of that. They're all over the city, different areas of it, and they're there all day. That's their living, making, washing cars, and they're taking money away from people that has license to do that. And I'll hang up and listen and see what the mayor says.
I was not aware of the car washing, so that'll be something I'm typing in my list right here that we'll find out. We've had a lot of issues on vacant lots. I just had this discussion yesterday with the city manager and actually had the discussion with the police chief that, you know, we've put ordinances in place. It drives me crazy, Scott, that these car lots around town, they unload all of their cars on the side of the road or in some case in the middle of the road.
I've seen that often.
And so we are really going to start making a focus to make sure, like Broad Street is a great example. You drive down Broad Street from Clark Avenue all the way back to really Thompson Lane, and you've got these businesses that are on the side of the road. There's some car repair shops, some car lots, and they park their cars on the side of the road in the right of way. Well, that doesn't sound like a big deal until the person who's pulling out from somewhere can't see the oncoming traffic because a car is blocking their view and they get T-boned in the side. So what the caller is saying, and I'm glad he let us know that, some of the things that, you know, you don't know until you know. So that's something that we will continually check on to make sure vacant lots are not for running businesses. And I know to the resident out there, it sounds like that we're trying to be, you know, sticklers and hard on everything, but I know we had someone, for example, that was pulling out of Sylvan Park. It was an older lady that one of the oil change places right there had a car parked unloading stuff on the side, and she couldn't see, and she pulled out, and she got T-boned. And so those are the things and what the caller's talking about that we really have to focus on, too.
I guess that would be the equivalent of a fast food restaurant opening up, but the problem is the drive-through is actually in your neighbor's parking lot. In other words, if you're a car dealer, you really need to make room for deliveries of a full car hauler.
Well, we changed our ordinance because what we were seeing, these vacant lots all of a sudden would turn into a pop-up car lot. Church Street and Broad Street predominantly is where we were seeing that. And if you have a business, for example, you're a landscaping company or you're a grocery store, well, you have to make accommodations for your product to be able to get in and out of your site. So, I mean, you don't see Kroger, for example, the caller that called earlier, you don't see Kroger parked on 231 and walking their stock into their store.
That's a good point.
So, and most businesses are that way. You don't see restaurants that have product being unloaded from the street. And when you've got these huge semi trucks loaded down with cars and they're parked on the side of the road and you got a guy walking around the truck unloading, it's not safe for that person unloading the product, and it's sure as heck not safe for drivers. And we're going to focus on that. I think we're going to have a renewed focus on the driving in Murfreesboro. I mean, you know, we don't have red light cameras anymore, but just some of the aggressive driving in Murfreesboro, I really think you're going to start seeing a focus on us taking care of that.
And you know, it's almost cruel to do to a delivery person to say, you've got to park in the middle of the street. You've got to park right there on the edge of the roadway, and we're going to put you at risk of being hit by a car.
To some of the...
I'm going too far here.
No, you're not. No, you're not at all. I mean, I completely agree. You know, and I think that's the thing, like the caller who called earlier about uses and changing uses and the oil change spot that we have to be careful with. I mean, for example, there was a brickyard that called me the other day, and they were on East College, West College Street, and they moved. And so they were going to lease their space out to another company that was going to have semi trucks that were delivering product. And when they went and met with the planning department said, hey, look, this is a change of use. You've got a gravel parking lot. You can't do that anymore. And the reason I say that, it sounds like that's being hard on these property owners, but if you don't at some point draw a line in the sand when things change, then, you know, what's that old saying? When you do what you've always done, you get what you've always got. And specifically Broad Street, 50 years ago, you can remember Broad Street was not that busy, and people literally would pull off into Broad Street into a parking lot.
Yeah.
You know, the parking lots are on Broad Street. So now things have changed. TDOT's changed their rules, and we have to adapt with that to make sure that, you know, all these pop-up car lots, you can't unload your product on the street. It's just not safe.
Another question we have here, it says, or ask, is there a building height limit in Murfreesboro? Because it seems like we never see buildings over about three stories tall being built.
It depends which area you're in. That's a pretty complicated question. For example, around the airport, really two stories as tall as you can go. I think that's 20 feet. The majority of the zoning districts inside the city of Murfreesboro, I want to say, are 30 or 35 feet. There are areas like the Gateway downtown where that's much, much higher. I mean, you've got the judicial building. I want to say that's like 85 feet. You've got the NHC building. That's 150, 160 feet. So it really just depends. Another area that you have restrictions, the battlefield protection, the BPZ, battlefield protection zone, BPZ. There's a height requirement or a height restriction there that you can't go a certain distance because of the battlefield. So that's a, depends what area you're in. When I was in law school, my property teacher would say, maybe you'd ask him a question, JD McBroom was his name, and you'd ask him a question, he'd say, maybe yes, maybe no. And so on height restrictions, maybe yes, maybe no.
Speaking of the battlefield, I know the city of Murfreesboro is going to be working with the Stones River Battlefield with a future park on Broad Street. Explain that to us.
When I was first elected mayor, that was 2014. Feels a lot longer, Scott.
You're old. No.
Yeah, true. Facts. Or as the boys say, I've learned all the lingo with the boys. They'll tell me I don't have much riz, is what it's called.
Haven't heard that one.
Yeah, riz is charisma. So O'Reilly's had purchased the old Chromalox site, or the old GE site, that's on the corner of Thompson Lane and Broad Street. And they wanted to put a huge distribution facility there. And the city had already met with them and said, no way, we're not going to be supportive of this. Broad Street and the Thompson, Broad Street is an F-rated road. It's a state road. Thompson Lane is a state road. That interchange intersection is an F-rated intersection. And there's no chance that we're going to agree to put a distribution facility there with semi-trucks coming in and out. So we went through this whole community meetings, all those things. Well, long story short, finally, I think they saw that, you know, the city's not going to back down on this. And so they ended up selling that property to Friends of the Greenway. It was a national group. And they got a grant to be able to buy the property. And so the city partnered with that group. That group has given that land to the city. And so we're going to end up having walking trails and those type of things to be able to go and access the battlefield from that site.
And when will that actually happen? Because this has been in the works, I guess, for a while now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the site, I think the site's been 2 or 3 years. But, I mean, you have to take into account, even though the city may have access and I don't want to say technical ownership, there's a process to go through with the battlefield and with the federal government to be able to do that. And so they're still working through that process.
Next question for the mayor. It says, is it legal to park on the street in neighborhoods within the city?
Yes, it's legal.
Well, there you have it.
Yeah. I mean, a short answer that, I mean, those streets are public. You can't block streets to where, one, you can't block someone's driveway, and you can't block the road to where emergency vehicles or traffic can get, you know, get through. But the short answer is yes, it's legal to park on the street.
Next question. How is it allowable by codes to build homes that are 3 to 4 stories tall in downtown Murfreesboro that don't even have an elevator and there's only one room on each floor? Are there homes like that in downtown? I guess they're assuming maybe those, the tall, skinny structures residential on Maple Street.
There's not a code. There's not a code that requires elevators to be, you know, put in residential units.
That'd be costly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not too bad. I mean, your average elevator is going to cost about $30,000 per unit. So it's not that bad, but there's not a code that says, you know, you have to do that. I mean, most of the tall skinnies you see in Nashville don't have elevators in them. And for that matter, that's typically not why you're not seeing, you know, someone my age who's buying a product that they've got to go up, you know, four flights of stairs to get to the rooftop access. But no, there's no code. There is a commercial code in certain buildings that once you get to a certain height that you do have to have ADA and elevator access.
I haven't been in one of those types of houses, but are there really just one floor, you know, one room to one floor?
So the ones that we built before, you've got, you have a garage on the, a two-car garage on the main level. You walk in and you have a bedroom on the bottom level with a bathroom. And then you go up a set of stairs and you have a kitchen, living room, laundry room, and a bedroom. And then you go up another flight of stairs and you've got two bedrooms, two master bedrooms. So that was four bedrooms. And then you would go up another flight of stairs. And on the very top, you know, at that point, you're 35 feet tall. You've got an outdoor area with a TV with a grilling station and a gazebo on the top. I mean, if I were single 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and I could afford one of them, that'd be a cool spot to be able to sit up and see the downtown. But, you know, I think what you're seeing, Scott, is specifically in the downtown area, you're trying to find ways that, in the meeting I was in yesterday, I think they told me on Lytle Street, there was 37 owner-occupied units and 29 rental units. It was almost 50-50. And so what you're trying to do is to find ways that people will improve those rental units or people buy those and turn them into owner-occupied. Because what you're starting to see is as those units turn into disrepair, people just don't repair them. They just leave them the way they are.
Again, Murfreesboro Mayor Shane McFarland on the air with us this morning, and we are already out of time, but thank you for joining us.
We are News Radio WGNS 100.5, 101.9, 1450, online and on your phone at WGNSradio.com.